setting the right expectations. One of my worst nightmares is doing a presentation on Friday afternoon, 3 p.m. It's 28 degrees out there, there's free ice cream, and your nightmare is nobody is here. And Microsoft says, you have to do your presentation because we want to record it. Thank you for coming here on this on my session. Exchange in the cloud, scared of losing your job. This is not really a technical presentation like my migration session yesterday, but it's more based on questions that I get from people, from Exchange admins, sometimes IT admins, regarding Exchange in the cloud. And what will happen if you move to the cloud, if you move to Office 365, or if you move to a private cloud, or whatever solution available. So the agenda for today, a small introduction. I'm going to explain a bit about private cloud and public cloud. We're going to talk about identities and migration. That's the more technical stuff. Coexistence, hybrid scenario with Exchange on-premise and Office 365. I'm going to talk a bit about understanding single sign-on, and we'll end with a summary. That's me, Jaap Pezelius. I'm a system architect at Amzio. Amzio is a managed service provider based in the Netherlands. So we offer hosted Exchange, hosted SharePoint, hosted Link. We're working on hosted CRM, hosted desktop. We also offer private cloud solution, and we have Azure running in our data center. So you can buy Azure running at Microsoft, owned by Microsoft. You can run Azure at local ISPs. Can have some political implications. If a Dutch customer comes to us and is hosting Azure, it's still in the Netherlands. We're a Netherlands company, so we are not scared of any American government looking for information in our data centers. I'm an Exchange Server MVP, author of the book Exchange Server 2010, A Practical Approach, working on some other books and publications. I'm a frequent blogger, a frequent speaker at major events like TechEd or the Quest Conference, Connections, Dev Connections in Las Vegas, all kinds of sessions. The starting point. Suppose you're an Exchange administrator. Makes sense. If you were a SQL administrator, most likely you were not in my session. But you're an Exchange administrator, and you're responsible for running an Exchange on-premise. And you do a pretty good job, at least you think, and your manager think. But your manager is attending these Microsoft pre-sale seminars where they talk about the cloud and how nice it is and cheap and easy and great, latest and greatest. Several managers talk to each other. Are you already in the cloud? Yes, I am. I'm so happy. And he wants it in your organization. Now what? Should you be afraid? Any changes? Opportunities? Who is afraid in such a situation? Nobody. There goes my presentation. I can skip 50 slides. Some misunderstandings about the cloud in general. I'm going to lose my job. Are you? Maybe. There is a possibility you will lose your job. Another one. The cloud means less IT staff. Nah. I don't think so. There still will be work in IT on premises if you move to the cloud. Every loser can become an IT administrator because of ease of use. In my initial slide, I had every monkey can become an IT, but that was too offensive. Everything is moving to the cloud. Yeah, right. Maybe in Microsoft dreams, everything is moving to the cloud. Personally, I don't see everybody moving to Office 365. People are moving, and people still will be moving, but Not everything is moving to the cloud. The cloud is much cheaper. When you go to Office 365 and you say, okay, I have an E3, for example, it's $20 per month. That, yeah, if you have 1,000 users, it will cost $20,000 per month. That's quite a lot of money. But look at the amount you have to spend on your local environment. If you have a private cloud, for example, there is not much room for discussion about pricing. Another one, even the IT manager can manage the cloud. Some can, most cannot. The definition of cloud technology. You have to make sure that everybody is on the same page when talking about cloud. And there is this National Institute of Standards and Technology, NIST, in the US. And they make all kinds of definitions and de facto standards. And the NIST definition is also used by Microsoft. And the NIST definition lists 5 essential characteristics of cloud technology. The on-demand self-service, broad network access, resource pooling, rapid elasticity or expansion, and measured service. What does that mean? You have a service running somewhere in a data center. On-demand self-service means that you have a customer portal you can go to, and you can create or request, demand more resources, more virtual machines, more mailboxes, more disk storage, whatever, more resources. You can do it yourself. Broad network access. Resource pooling. In the data center, there are large amounts of servers. And these servers are shared across multiple customers. Can be physical machines, can be virtual machines, whatever. There are resources, and there's resource pooling, and it's shared across multiple customers. Rapid elasticity. Being a hoster of being Microsoft, you have to continuously monitor your environment, your platform. And you have to predict when to buy new hardware. But also, as a customer, you have the possibility to expand your environment just on the fly. It's a measured service. You pay as you go. You have X amount of mailboxes, you pay for X amount of mailboxes. If you increase, you pay more. If you decrease, you pay less. More virtual machines, more money. But if you don't need them anymore, you can just decommission them and you pay less. Everything is measured in cloud technology. There are 3 service models in the NIST model. Software as a service. In this model, the software is offered. Office 365 is an example of this. Microsoft is responsible for the hardware, for the operating system, for the applications, for the services, everything. You buy a mailbox, you buy a SharePoint site, you buy some archiving, whatever. Software is offered as a service. There is also platform as a service. And in platform as a service, you buy or rent a virtual machine with an operating system on it, the Cloud OS, for example, in Azure. Related to this is infrastructure as a service, where you only hire or rent a plain server. In this scenario, you are responsible for the operating system. You are the one installing the operating system. You are the one responsible for maintaining the operating system. And the hoster is blamed when you do a fuck-up. Where does platform stop and where does infrastructure start? That's a bit difficult, a gray area, but it's documented in the agreement you have with your hoster. NIST also defines deployment models. And the first one is a private cloud. And private cloud is a very hot buzzword at the moment. dedicated service specifically for one customer, and it can be located on premises or in a hosted data center. You go to their website, you order a couple of virtual machines, and you can do anything you want. Then they are hosted in their data center. You can also build it on premises. You buy your blade hardware, install Hyper-V or VMware or whatever. And in case of Hyper-V, virtual machine manager, the portal, orchestration, everything. So you can create your portal for provisioning services, for provisioning your servers, for installing your software, everything. That's a private cloud you can build in your own computer room, on premises. If you have this, there's no discussion about money. You have to pay everything. But you have the flexibility. Public cloud is available to everyone. And you can compare it to electricity coming from a wall outlet or water coming from the water tap. There's a community cloud. It's a cloud shared amongst multiple organizations or users. I've never seen one, and it's my belief it's more a theoretical thing. And we have the hybrid cloud. And the hybrid cloud is a combination of the three models. Office 365 can be a hybrid solution, where it's a combination of your on-premises environment with Office 365, where they can integrate. We come back on that later in the presentation. But you can also do a private cloud and a public cloud, a combination. That's the hybrid cloud. Exchange in the cloud. What does this mean specifically for Exchange? If you go to a local host or you go to Office 365, you have X number of mailboxes and running on a shared platform. You can go to the customer portal. You can order more mailboxes. You can set up federation with your local on-premises Exchange if needed. The private cloud in this case can be in a local host or can be installed on your own data center. Azure officially does not support installing Exchange server on Azure servers. There are a number of articles out there explaining how to do it, and it will run, but officially it's not supported. You can do Active Directory. So Windows Azure Active Directory, WAAD, is also the Active Directory used for Office 365. But you have an X number of servers. And again, there's an on-demand self-service. But you have this dedicated Exchange environment only for you. And yeah, if you have a private cloud, if you have it in a data center running somewhere, you can connect it, of course, to your own Active Directory. That's not a big deal. Exchange in a private cloud is more an extension of your local network. If you have an IaaS solution, you are still responsible for the operating system, for Exchange, and for services. All services running on this machine. If you have the platform as a service, the provider is responsible for the OS, but you are still responsible for Exchange and all services. It's flexible. You have your self-service measured, so you pay as you go. All these options have a certain impact on your job as an Exchange administrator. Exchange in the public cloud is a shared platform, can be Office 365. And Exchange basically is a, I say large, but it's huge shared platform running in multiple data centers worldwide. And the provider is responsible for the OS. So Windows running Exchange, the connectivity, all services, anti-spam, antivirus, everything. But you, as the Exchange administrator, are still responsible in this case for the identities, for the mailboxes, for the migration, for the connectivity from your clients or your office to the data center, and very important, you are responsible for end user support. There is some help desk functionality within Microsoft. You can submit issues, and they will try to solve it, but only when it's Office 365 related. You are still responsible for end users. So the key takeaways of this part. The definition of cloud means that everybody is on the same page. Everybody is talking about the same stuff, according to NIST. And there are the characteristics, the service models, and the deployment models. And the main thing about cloud technology means, or is, flexibility. You are very flexible in deploying services, mailboxes, stuff, servers, whatever. And a private cloud is dedicated for you. It can be Azure, it can be anything. It can be in a data center, at a provider. It can be on premises, built by some system integrator. If you do this, your job as an exchange administrator is not very likely to change. If you go to a public cloud, for example, Office 365, it's very likely to change. In a cloud environment, you have to talk about identities. There are two options. There is a cloud identity, and there's a federated identity. And last week, there were quite a lot of questions about these identities. And the difference between the identities, especially the federated identity, that's a bit difficult to understand for a lot of people. If you have a cloud identity, that's a separate credential from the on-premise credential. So you have your own Active Directory, where you create users and mailboxes. You go to Office 365, and there you can create mailboxes as well. If you have a cloud identity, that's a normal user account and a normal mailbox running in the Windows Azure Active Directory. That's a separate account. You authenticate on-premise using your own Active Directory, using your own domain controllers. In Office 365, you log on and you are authenticated against Active Directory in Office 365. So you have an account here and an account there, with separate security policies, separate password policies. You own the account here, but basically Microsoft owns the account here in the cloud. If you have a federated identity, the most important identity is the one on premises, the one in your own Active Directory. There is an account in Office 365, and this account has a mailbox. But when you go to the mailbox, you don't authenticate against the Azure Active Directory. You authenticate against your own Active Directory. So you have only one account, and this account is leading, and this account is located in your own Active Directory. You have to set up a mechanism for single sign-on for authentication against your own Active Directory. And this is the ADFS, the Active Directory Federation Service. And this one is responsible for authentication. You go to your mailbox, and you are authenticated against your own Active Directory. So you always have to keep in mind, there's a cloud identity, which means there's an identity here, and there's an identity here, two separate identities, and we have a federated identity. And for this federated identity, you need multiple or additional tools. Now, the cloud identity is normally seen in smaller organizations where you don't want to set up directory synchronization or federation services. But the advantage of the cloud identity, especially for small organizations, it's easy to require. No additional hardware, no software. But the limitations, of course, you don't have any single sign-on. There is no two-factor authentication, and you have different password policies. So it can happen that your password policy on-premise is requiring you to change your password, and the password is not changed in Active Directory or in Office 365. And on the other hand, if you have a federated identity, when you have to change your password on premises, it's automatically used in Office 365 as well. But it requires additional hardware, require additional services, and it requires additional skills from the administrator, the Exchange administrator most likely. So how do you provision the identities? If you have a 5-user environment, you use them, you manually do it using the control panel. You log on as the administrator, you enter the account details, and that's it. You can also do it in a batch using a CSV file. So you do an export or whatever. You go to the control panel, you import the CSV file, and you can do bulk management using the import tool. And another one is directory synchronization, DirSync. And DirSync makes sure that what you do here is automatically replicated into the cloud. If you create a user in your on-premise active directory, this user is automatically synchronized with Office 365. If you make any changes to your local account, the changes are also replicated to Office 365. A couple of weeks ago, I think it was on the first day of TechEd in New Orleans, or maybe one day before, a new version was released of the directory synchronization, which includes password synchronization. So if you change your password on-premises, the password change is automatically replicated into Office 365. So if you change it here, it will change there as well. So you don't have two separate sets of password. Now, I'm not an Active Directory guru, but what I understand is not the actual password is migrated, but the hash value of the password is synchronized into Office 365. It's designed as some software-based appliance. You set it, forget it, no action needed. You install it on Windows 2008 or Windows 2012. And it's based, it's a subset of Vim. You can also use Vim to do this, but then it becomes a little complicated. It's using some SQL server, which is automatically included. And it enables run state administration and management of user groups and contacts. It synchronizes additions, deletions, modifications of users of groups from on-premise to Office 365, but it's one-way traffic. So if you make changes using the control panel in Office 365, these changes are not replicated back to on-premises. It can be an enabler for single sign-on. It's the last part of the presentation. But it's not intended as a single-use bulk upload tool. So if you want to migrate all users to the cloud, yeah, you can set up a directory synchronization and copy everything into the cloud. But it was not the intention of Microsoft for this specific tool. So at one point, you have all your users in the cloud. Only the user accounts from on-premise to Office 365. And you have to migrate your data to the cloud. There are various options. Just in case you are running Exchange 5.5. Anyone? Zag ik nou een hand? Or Exchange 2000, Exchange 2003, maybe? Anyone? Nah. Now you can use the IMAP migration if you want. For Exchange 2007, 2010, there are more options available. You can use the cutover Exchange migration. You can use the staged Exchange migration tool. For larger organizations, you can use a hybrid deployment, which makes life very easy. There are also additional tools available. Because when you use an IMAP tool, you can migrate from whatever platform. You can also use a third-party migration option. For example, MigrationWiz is a tool we use very often, which is a cloud migration service. It's running in a data center somewhere in Seattle. MigrationWiz was founded by a couple of former Microsoft employees. and they log in to the source server, and they log in to the target server and move the data from source to target. And it's a service, it's based on connectors, and there are multiple connectors for all kinds of services and all kinds of providers. And you can select the provider from the source or the target. You can use your own provider, or whatever it may be, and just move the mailbox. They do everything for you. They also monitor, so if you see any performance issues, for example, you can raise a call and they can see, okay, what's going on? Why is it so slow? So migration is a very nice tool. The disadvantage, of course, is you have to pay for a tool like this. The cutover exchange migration is typically seen in smaller environments. It's a quick, simple migration. In the early days of Office 365, this one also referred to as the simple exchange migration. All mailbox content is migrated from your own environment to Office 365. There's a limitation of 1,000 mailboxes. Users are provisioned automatically. So you set up a service account, and the service account has to be able to read all the content of all mailboxes, of course. And it pushes all this information into Office 365. At one point, you switch over from on-premises to Office 365, you switch the MX records, and then all data still on-premises is moved into the cloud. So there are two steps. Users, groups, contacts are actually moved into Office 365 using Outlook, Outlook Anywhere, and the mailbox data is migrated from Exchange 2003 or later to Office 365. Just using Outlook Anywhere, it just logs on to the source server and moves all the data over. But you have to, the users are created there. The service account cannot read the password, so new passwords will be created. So you have to hand out new passwords. And users have to change passwords at first logon. The user experience is, of course, the passwording, but most important, or very important, all mail is downloaded from the Office 365 mailbox. So it will create a new OST file. And if you have 500 users, at the moment you make the switch, they will connect to Office 365, and these 500 users will download or create new OST files in Office and download the entire contents. The second one is the staged exchange migration. It's a bit more complex. So the cutover migration you see typically in smaller organizations where everything is moved into Office 365. And the staged exchange migration is more flexible, targeted towards medium and large enterprises. Users are not provisioned manually or using CSV files, but are provisioned using directory synchronization. And now, with the latest version, also the passwords are synchronized. There's no limit on the number of mailboxes. Identity management is performed on-premises because everything is synchronized with Office 365. But you don't need any on-premises migration tool. So the content migration is the same as the cutover exchange migration. But in this case, the users, groups, contacts, and passwords are synchronized with Office 365 using DirSync. And again, the mailbox database, or the mailbox data, is moved to Office 365 using Outlook Anywhere. I actually had to change, or I forgot to change the slide because the password is no longer valid because the passwords are now synchronized with your on-premise environment. Important to note that this still is a cloud identity. It's not a federated identity. You have a cloud identity, and the cloud identity has the same credentials as your on-premise identity. But Microsoft still owns this identity in the cloud. Users create new Outlook profile because it's a new Outlook. It's a new user. It's a new mailbox. It's a new GUID under the hood. So a new Outlook profile is created. A new OST needs to be created. So again, if you make the switch, you will download all mailbox content at the same moment. The key takeaways here. Cloud identities versus federated identities. Keep in mind, the cloud identities are two separate identities. There are multiple migration solutions. You can use an IMAP migration tool or a third-party migration tool. And these can be used for very old Exchange platforms or some other LDAP, whatever, POP3, IMAP 4-based messaging solution. We have the cutover migration targeted for smaller organizations, and we have the staged migration targeted towards medium and larger organizations. And what does this mean for the typical Exchange admin? Less dedicated Exchange-related activities. Because Microsoft or the provider is responsible for everything. We are responsible for the upgrade of Exchange 2010 to 2013 without causing any issues. The same is true for Link, for SharePoint, for CRM, whatever. And that's also for Microsoft. So you don't have to care about hotfixes, service packs, upgrades, whatever. But your work will shift towards identity and network-related activities. Very important in this scenario is your network connection to the internet. Microsoft says, okay, we have an uptime, guaranteed uptime of 3 or 4 nines, which is nice, which is great. But the uptime is in their data center towards their entry point. So if you are facing some issues in the internet connection, your users are toast. So you have to, your work will shift into that area. And of course, you have to do some migration work. Coexistence and hybrid. This is the more interesting part. Hey. What is coexistence? Some users are provisioned on premises, while some users are provisioned in Office 365. But they are all in the same organization. So you have a global address list where all users are located. Users located on premises are in the global address list, but also the users in Office 365. They are in the same address list. You have one namespace, contoso.com. You go to owa.contoso.com and you go to on-premise or Office 365. Autodiscover.contoso.com automatically determines where your mailbox is located without any issues. Email messages are routed between Office 365 and on-premises seamlessly for end users. Or the other nice features like mail tips or free busy information between Office 365 and on-premises are seamless. So you can check free busy information, whether the user is here or the user is in Office 365. The simple coexistence deployment. You have to implement a directory synchronization tool, DirSync, for global address list synchronization. And it provides a global or a unified global address list experience. It can be used with cloud identities or federated identities. In a federated identity, your mailbox is located there, but the account is located here. But from a global address list perspective, it's a transparent solution. It does not require, in a simple coexistence deployment, an on-premise hybrid server. But you need this directory synchronization tool to keep them up to date. Is this the same slide? Almost. And in the hybrid, for example, you can see free busy. If you do not have a hybrid solution, for example, when you have two separate environments, you see user one wants to set up a meeting is not able to see FreeBSD information of user 2. And if you set up a hybrid scenario, he is able to see this information. That's just shared between the two platforms. Also, mail tips, for example. When user 1 sends an email to user 2 or wants to send an email, Outlook will show the mail tip, okay, this recipient is outside your organization. Actually, the recipient is not outside your organization, but Exchange and Outlook think they are. And in a full hybrid scenario, they are in the same organization. So Outlook is aware of this situation. Also, sending mail between on-premises to Office 365. In a normal scenario, you send the mail to Office 365 via the internet. It's just an SMTP recipient. Even if it's your own colleague, for Exchange, it's just an SMTP recipient. And if you set up a hybrid scenario, then it's a trusted environment. And it's a normal recipient, just like the guy sitting next to you based on the Exchange server on premises. So we have user groups, contacts, and passwords synchronized using DirSync from the on-premises Exchange organization to Office 365. But right now, we have a secure mail flow between on-premises and Office 365. There's FreeBSD information, mail type, mail tips, archive, all kind of interesting stuff securely across the internet between on-premises and Office 365. And if you move mailboxes, no longer Outlook Anywhere, but the mailbox replication server is used to move data from on-premise to Office 365. Or back if you want to. So you can move mailboxes into the cloud, but you can also decide to move mailboxes back from the cloud. That's the same mailbox replication service as I discussed yesterday in my migration presentation. Suppose you have this environment, and you have Exchange 2010 or you have Exchange 2007, and you want to create a hybrid scenario with Office 365. And maybe you have some intranet site and there's Office 365 as well. So you have autodiscover.com, we have mail.contoso.com, everything is working fine. Now, before you implement the hybrid scenario, make sure that you upgrade all Exchange servers to the latest version, latest service pack, latest roll-up update fixes, because you have to implement Exchange 2013 first. So you implement Exchange 2013, mailbox servers, client access servers, and you can implement an Exchange 2010 Edge Transport server. Because there still is no Exchange 2013 Edge Transport server, you have to fall back to a previous version. You have to configure the environment, of course, setting the right URLs for the web services, virtual directory, all kinds of stuff. You have to obtain deploy certificates, third-party certificates, of course, and install them on this server. Create public DNS records for EVS, EWS, SMTP, and use the remote connectivity analyzer to validate your environment. And at that point, you can switch your Autodiscover namespace to the 2013 client access server. And at that point, the client access server is responsible for handling all Autodiscover requests. And the last one is run the hybrid configuration wizard. And the hybrid configuration wizard creates the connection between on-premise and Office 365 and will make sure that's one environment, one logical environment. And if so, you can move mailboxes. Office 365 and on-premise in this scenario is a fully trusted, they trust each other, fully trusted environment, so you can move mailboxes back and forth. This is not rocket science. It's quite a lot of work, but it's not that bad. Most important, bullet number 4. You set up a trust relationship between Office 365 and on-premises. So the same user account is used, the GUIDs, etc. So if you move the mailbox, there's no need to recreate a new OST file, because it's basically the same mailbox being moved. But instead of moved to another server, it's moved to a server into the cloud. This is the tricky part. And this is the part that will definitely impact the Exchange administrator's work. And it will change his or her job. It enables user to access on-premises data and cloud-based data with the same set of credentials. You log on to the local workstation on the local, using the local domain controllers, and you can access services in the cloud, in Office 365. And your on-premise Active Directory is leading in this case. You own Active Directory. You don't own Active Directory in Office 365, but who cares? The account is not really used at that point. So you have policy control, you have access control, reduced support calls, security, support for strong authentication. You can set up two-factor authentication when you have a combined environment. Step number one is the Office 365 desktop setup. It's a small application you can download from the Office 365 website, and which will configure your client. It will configure Internet Explorer clients like the Link client or Outlook for use with Office 365. This setup application, it's a setup application. It's not a single sign-on application, and you should not confuse it with the actual single sign-on. It's just an application that will configure and prepare your workstation. The second one is the online sign-in assistant, which has to be installed. And this one enables single sign-on using the rich clients. So you need this, this tool is required to set up single sign-on. So we have this on-premises environment, the green box, where you have Active Directory, you have clients, and you have Office 365, or Microsoft Exchange Online in this case. The user comes into the office, logs on, has the normal credentials, and logs on Active Directory using your own domain controller. The user starts Outlook, and Outlook wants to go to Exchange Online. And is presented a set of the pop-up box and has to enter credentials. Oh, wait. And the credentials are given to the Exchange server. The Exchange server goes to the domain controllers in Office 365, but they are not actually authenticated here, but they need to be validated by the local domain controller. So the Exchange server in this case goes to the proxy, the ADFS server. You have to install in your local environment. And using this package, there is the authentication credentials, which are handed over to the domain controller. And a so-called SAML token is handed back to the Exchange server. And this particular token, in turn, is presented to the domain controllers and returned back as an authentication token to the server. And at that point, the user can access his mailbox. But the important part here is that the user is not authenticated here, but authenticated here. And a special token is created at the ADFS server and presented to the Exchange server. So you have to build a new infrastructure into your Active Directory environment for ADFS. And that's the difficult part, because ADFS is running on certificates. You have to set up the trust relationship and everything. But what happens if the ADFS server is not available? users can no longer access the mailbox because they don't have the token to present here, and they have no possibility to access here. So this one is becoming extremely important, and also the ADFS server is a very important part in your infrastructure. Okay, there are no exchange servers here you have to take care of, but you have, again, now have these servers to take care of. And this is a bit of a misunderstood part in a hybrid scenario. That's an extremely important part in your environment. Goes back again. So the important components here are the directory synchronization, claims-based authentication using ADFS, and ADFS must be redundant and highly available. And what's the most important part? If you have this, your job will shift from an exchange administrator to an identity administrator. You have to know identities. You have to know identity management. You have to know security. You have to know certificates. You have to know high availability. Very important parts to set up an environment like this. So the coexistence in a hybrid scenario is Exchange, on-premise, and Office 365 together to create a seamless user experience. That's great. But it's very important to think about the implications. Now go back to the first slide. Your manager wants to go to Office 365. Afraid of losing your job. If you are not willing to change, yes, you should be. Your job description will change from Exchange admin to more Identity admin. And if you are in a small organization, there will be less worries. You have 20 mailboxes running in the cloud and your clients will connect there. And okay, they have to authenticate again against their Active Directory. Who cares? And if you have a large organization, your work will shift from more messaging activities to identity management activities. But the most important part in this deck is actually, if you stand still, it's equal to regression. You have to improve, you have to change. If you are not willing to change, then most likely, you can be afraid of losing your job. It was a pretty quick presentation. I have 25 minutes left for questions. I want to thank you for your attendance here. That's my name, my email address, if you have any questions, or my blog post. If you have any questions, feel free.